Well, hiya, and welcome into Sports Talk. We're here to help you get through the end of your hump day, the middle of the week here, October 4th. Scott Beatty and Marcus Jackson with you. We are on the eve of the National League Division Series, Cubs and Nationals. We will be talking about that as we go along today. Also get some high school updates with Anthony Zillis. Marcus, how are you, sir?
I'm great.
What do you want to talk about today?
Whatever's on your mind.
Okay.
I'm free to talk about anything. I'm an open book. I can go any direction you want.
Okay. I just want to encourage you to be able to make sure you know you can freely express yourself.
Oh yeah. Okay. Thanks. I appreciate that. I didn't know that.
Okay. I don't want you to ever hold back.
Okay.
Good to have you with us. You can join the program if you like by giving us a call, 356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 217-351-5357. A look at our headlines. The Cubs have announced their starting rotation for the NLDS, which begins on Friday night in Washington, D.C. Game one starter is Kyle Hendricks, who has had the best ERA in the National League for the second half of the season. Overall, went 7-5 with a 3.03 ERA. Then John Lester will get the ball in game two, Jose Quintana in game three, and if necessary, Jake Arrieta in game four. And I assume you just go with the hot hand if he gets to a game five, maybe back to Hendricks then. Hendricks missed time in June and July with a finger injury, but had a 2.19 ERA and 13 starts after the All-Star break. On the Washington side of things, they have not announced their starting rotation yet. A lot of question marks around Max Scherzer, who was slated to do a bullpen session today, but ended up not doing that. He tweaked his right hamstring and his last regular season start. Earlier today, GM Mike Rizzo said Scherzer would appear in the NLDS, just not sure which games or if he would be starting. So we'll get the latest on all of that with Jamal Collier from MLB.com. He's on the Nationals beat, used to cover the Illini here for the Daily Illini and then the Peoria Journal Star. So we'll get the latest with Jamal in a few minutes. Tonight is the National League wild card game, the winner take all to go on to the National League Division Series against the LA Dodgers, Arizona, and Colorado. Arizona going with four of their five starting pitchers on the roster tonight. Their starter is Zach Greinke, the Rocks. Key guy for them, Charlie Blackmon at the top of that lineup. You going to take that game in?
Yeah, I enjoy these games. It's like you get an automatic game seven right off the bat. So they're a lot of fun to watch. I remember when the Cubs were in it a couple years ago with the Pirates. That was fun. Last night's game, it was a little too late for me. I fell asleep, and I didn't know who won.
It seemed like ball in hand. I fell asleep too, but Yankees were up 8-4, and that ended up being the final. I was reading an article by Ken Rosenthal resurfacing the whole, is it an unfair game for the wild card winners? I like the suggestion that had been thrown out. I think John Smoltz has been a proponent of, apparently the Korean Baseball League has a little bit different way where the lower seed has to win twice. So it's like you've put them in a loser's bracket almost and made a double elimination for the higher seed. That would make things interesting. The counter argument to that is, hey, you had 162 games to win your division and not be in this position at all, because what was happening before is it just wasn't making for good competition down the line, because a team would look like, hey, I already know I'm in the wild card. So the drama is great. Is it fair to everybody? It's an interesting debate.
I like that, what John Smoltz said. I think that's probably the most reasonable way to handle all this without extending the postseason any more than it is give that first team has to just win one game and get through with it. But back to tonight's game, I am excited, though, because these teams are fun to watch. Arizona's at J.D. Martinez and Paul Goldschmidt. Is it Paul Goldschmidt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's an MVP candidate.
Right. I just make sure I guess first name, right? And those guys are really fun to watch. And then you got the Rockies with Charlie Blackmon at the top of the order, Nolan Arenado, and just up and down that lineup. They're fun to watch. So maybe you get to see some runs scored tonight.
Two teams that just don't get as much coverage for being in the western half of the United States. You know, as much real-time coverage, at least. I think anybody that follows them keeps up with them, but they just fly a little bit more under the radar, so you don't always know quite how good they are if you're an average fan.
You don't, and that's the unfortunate thing. It's just the way things are set up right now, but hopefully a lot of people will tune in tonight and just see how good these teams are, how fun they are to watch, and certainly they can make some noise. Whichever team gets out of this certainly has a really good chance to advance.
I think our guy Paul Klee is there tonight, now working in Colorado Springs.
He is. Yeah, I got a Snapchat from him earlier. Of course, he's in it. He likes to see himself, and so he included himself in that. But he sent one from the champagne-soaked locker room the other night too, when they were celebrating after they clinched the playoff berth, with the champagne spraying all over the place. So pretty cool job he's got right now.
Yeah, he is liking life out there in Colorado. All right, some Illinois basketball news to get to. This was widely speculated. Colin Castleton, a four-star prospect for the class of 2018 for basketball, the forward announced today he's committed to the Michigan Wolverines. He'd narrowed down his choices to Michigan and Illinois. Florida native headed to Ann Arbor. It's third miss now for Illinois. The other significant one, George Condit, who announced 2 days ago that he's going to Iowa State. What's your read on this? Is this fallout from a scandal? Is this just unfortunate? And are you nervous?
I think it's just recruiting. It's just the way things go. You get some, you don't get some. And factors here and there that work for and against you. But, you know, maybe it's a situation where I think a lot of people were excited with the hire, and rightfully so. You've got a really, really good coach in here, and I think maybe people thought it'd be automatic. You'd start to get players right away, and it seemed that way. They were getting in on a lot of guys. And it's not over yet. They still in for Aya Desumu and Taylor Norton Tucker and a couple other guys. So I don't know if you get nervous yet. Maybe it's a situation where Illinois has got to show something on the court this year in order for you to start to reap the rewards in recruiting down the line. So maybe if they show some improvement this year and it's an exciting brand of basketball, then recruits will be attracted to it. But right now they're just missing, and it's nothing that we haven't seen in recent years, unfortunately.
Can they afford a down year in recruiting?
You never really can, but I think with the fact that they've got so many young pieces who are going to be a part of this thing for a few years, I think maybe you could. You never want to settle or just say, okay, we missed out on some guys. It's okay. We'll get them next year. You want to try to get as many as you can, but if these young guys that they got in here this year come in and play pretty well, and you're going to maybe redshirt a guy or two, and those guys will come in, then you bring in a class behind them, then you can build off that, but I guess it's not the worst thing in the world, and maybe you get a guy in the spring or something like that, but they're going to have to start getting some guys at some point if they want to get this thing turned around.
I know you want Io, but I think the bigger need is down low. I mean, Io is a fantastic player, and you just go get the best players you can, but in terms of if you miss on Io, I kind of feel like the Illini might be at least okay.
Yeah, because as we mentioned, they're loaded in the backcourt. You got Mark Smith, Trent Frazier, Damonte Williams, Tijon Lucas gonna be here for a while too. So, you're right. It's not the worst thing in the world. The biggest need is up front for them right now. So they got to figure something out in that regard with recruiting and getting some big bodies in here.
Speaking of Tijon Lucas, he suffered a concussion over the weekend. No timetable set for his return. Lucas probably going to get a lot of playing time as a point guard. So we'll see if he is able to be back in short order or not. Illini are also looking forward for full returns from Damonte Williams. Of course, he's coming off that torn ACL. And LaRon Black had elbow surgery over the summer. So both of those are much more closer to Brad Underwood. Talked to Scott Ritchie, and that's at IlliniHQ.com. Both, he said those guys are a lot closer than Tijon, really no word on him, but that's tough for Tijon. Don't know exactly how it happened, but it happened in practice, and of course you don't mess around with that stuff.
Yeah, and you've got plenty of time to get him right. You like you said, you don't want to mess around with these, but it's not like football where you're at a giant risk when you go back out there of getting hit in the head again. I mean, these things happen. It's kind of a freak thing maybe, but there's plenty of time for him to get right, and he'll probably get back out there and maybe not miss a beat. So they're about 6 weeks away from the opener, so wouldn't worry too much about that at this point.
All right. Hey, we are off and running here on Sports Talk. Jamal Collier from MLB.com will help us get a breakdown of the Washington Nationals and the Chicago Cubs, which open up on Friday night out in the nation's capital. That is next.
We were definitely arriving at that same mental level that we've had the last two seasons. It's been hard to pull it out this season, like I said, just based on, I think, what had happened over the last 2 years. But right now, they're really acting in a very familiar manner.
Voice of Cubs manager Joe Maddon, who's feeling good about where his ball club is as they head into the playoffs, the National League Division Series starts Friday night in Washington, D.C. Our Sports Talk poll on our Twitter feed at WDWS1400. Vast majority of you think the Cubs will win the series. A third of you are giving it to the Nationals. You can weigh in on our poll at WDWS1400. All right, the last man in Washington, D.C. with integrity is Jamal Collier, an alum of the University of Illinois. He writes for the MLB.com, covers the Nationals, and he's kind enough to join us now. How are you doing, Jamal?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
We are doing well, and it's good to hear your voice. I think it's been since the spring since we've talked with you. First things first, Max Scherzer, what's going on? I read that he didn't have his bullpen session today.
No, kind of a change of what we all expected. Max was supposed to throw that bullpen today to really kind of test out his hamstring, which has kind of been a weird injury. He's been saying that it doesn't really bother him the usual times you think a hamstring strain would bother you, to be running, walking, and doing anything with his legs outside of when he has to go off a mound and push off a rubber and pitch. So he's supposed to go out there and try to test that today, play catch for a while, threw off flat ground, try to look like through some pitches. On a flat surface, but did not go into the bullpen and throw off the mound. We didn't get a chance to talk to Max or speak with anybody after the workout, whether it be Mike Rizzo or Dusty, to really figure out exactly why he didn't throw off the mound today. But, I think the fact that now he hasn't thrown a bullpen here this week at all, certainly rules him out probably for game one, and that's looking like it's going to be Steven Strasburg's start. It kind of puts his status for game two in jeopardy as well.
Is he perhaps not even a starter then, or is this the whole thing up in the air?
From the beginning, he said that he's going to pitch in the series. And I think that that's still a definite one thing that they do know is that everybody keeps reiterating that he is going to pitch. Just kind of a matter of when, not necessarily if. But they are sticking to it that eventually he's going to go off this mound here in games two or three.
Jamal, it's Marcus here. Good to hear from you. One of the underlying themes in this the series is Dusty Baker managing against the Cubs. I saw there was a story in the Tribune this week, and there still seems like there's a little bit of resentment there with Dusty and the way things ended and the way he's treated when he comes back to Chicago. What are your feelings on how he views Chicago, and is there a little something extra on this for him?
Yeah, I actually wrote about this as well on I believe Monday Dusty. It's been somewhat coy, I guess. It's kind of somewhat, not necessarily going too much into his time in Chicago. But there's definitely some resentment there. There's definitely some bad feelings that are still left over with the way it ended, in Chicago. And obviously, his name still brings so much, kind of ire from Cubs fans when you think about, the credit that he gets, the blame, I should say, he gets for how Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood's career went and the way 03 went. And I think that, there's just so many kind of layers to that, that even here we are, a decade later, and it's also not like Dusty's never come back to Chicago. He's obviously managed in the same division for 6 years with Cincinnati. But, there's some ill will kind of between, I feel like both sides, that, the Chicago fans don't necessarily remember him as fondly as a guy who before last year got them closer to the World Series than anybody else had in the past, 70 years. And for him to really the team that kind of put him a little bit on the map here, really, in baseball, that's there's just not a whole lot of good feelings between the two sides. And I know that it probably would mean a little bit extra to Dusty. As he searches for that first World Series, he wants to get past the first round of the Nats do anyway. But to do it against the Cubs, he kind of said to me at least that, he feels like this was meant to be, that here's his team that probably the most talented team he's had in a while, and possibly ever. And have a chance to face the Cubs, the defending world champions, and knock them off, to a potential World Series trip, would kind of be a storybook ending for Dusty. And if you remember anything about him, he's a very religious and kind of spiritual guy, and is all about signs and meanings and things. So we'll kind of see how that shapes up.
So what's your feeling, and maybe what's the consensus about how Dusty now manages pitchers, particularly in the postseason? Has there been a lot of criticism? Because I know the Nats are trying to shake that monkey too and get through the first round.
Yeah, the postseason stuff, because really, obviously, I had just one series against the Dodgers to really grade him. I thought he did a, for the most part, good job, especially in the first four games against that Dodgers series. I did have some things I probably disagree with the way it was winning game five against the Dodgers last year. That was when Max Scherzer was kind of. Was cruising through six innings, I believe, and it was a 1-0 game. And Max gives up a solo homer in the seventh on a pitch that was, you know, barely off the plate, as a matter of fact, to Jock Peterson. He hits the opposite field home run. He hadn't hit an opposite field home run all year. And from there, they pulled him. And I kind of just thought to myself, like, one, if you were so confident in Max, they should have kept him in the game, you know, after kind of a somewhat fluky home run. Or if you were going to pull him on that kind of short leash anyway, you probably should have pulled him before the inning started. But that being said, I think that Dusty's done a better job, I think, this year. You know, he rode his starters pretty hard early on in the season, and I think that was mostly a product just to the Nationals' bullpen. And they obviously had nobody they could really rely on to get them out late in the game. So, you know, the starters are the strength of this team, and he really went with Strasburg and Scherzer and Tanner Roark, you know, harder than he probably normally would have. And he did back off a little bit on that in the second half. And I think that, you know, he's taken note of the way bullpens have been used the last couple of years in the playoffs, last year especially. I don't know if he's going to be as radical to do something like Terry Francona does and use Andrew Miller. He doesn't have Andrew Miller, obviously, but use one of his relievers to kind of put out a big fire in the fourth or fifth inning. He might still try to save some of those guys for the last couple of innings, but it's going to be interesting to see how much, you know, different he's willing to be as far as this, as well as baseball and reliever usage kind of adapts here over the last couple of years of the postseason.
Nationals also dealing with some health issues in the lineup. Bryce Harper just returning from missing a few weeks with the knee injury. He's having an MVP caliber season. Where's he at with his recovery? I know he got a few games in there before the end of the regular season.
Yeah, he got five games in, which is, you know, better than nothing. I mean, it was kind of a pseudo minor league rehab assignment in the majors for Bryce. You know, and he looked better as time went on. You know, I think they've said the more and more at-bats they can get this guy against big league pitching, you know, the better it's going to be. And it's maybe sort of obvious, but they've also just tried to create as many scenarios as they can for Bryce to face live pitching. You know, the last couple of days they've had sim games, they've had batting practice, and they're just trying to get Bryce used to and be comfortable, you know, with being in those kind of situations. And I think that just Bryce Harper in the middle of the lineup is going to make a difference, because he's a guy who's going to draw walks, going to see pitches, and just that threat, you know, that he presents himself and just makes the depth of the Nationals lineup so much better when now you can move guys down from, you know, 3-4-5, all of a sudden they're hitting 4-5-6 when you talk about Zimmerman and Murphy and Rendon and those guys. So, you know, Bryce, I think, is going to his impact and his health in this series is going to go a long way to be. And whether or not the Nationals can kind of, you know, can come away with a win here, because I think that if he is hobbled and somewhere less than 100%, where he's not really giving you anything in the middle of the order, that could be a huge hole in the middle of the lineup. But if he's back to normal, then this lineup is as good, if not better, than anybody else in the league.
We're talking with Jamal Collier. He writes for MLB.com, covers the Nationals, former reporter for covering the Illini, both with Daily Illini in your student days and Peoria Journal Star as well. Follow him on Twitter at Jamal Collier. All right, Jamal, Nats are favored in this, and you know, I think odds makers for baseball in particular probably have the hardest job. But do you agree Nats should be favored in this series? Why?
Yeah, I think absolutely. They've been a better team than the Cubs pretty much, you know, all season long. And obviously the Cubs had expectations, and they were, you know, coming off the World Series last year. But the Nats right now have the pitching edge. Their lineup, when it's healthy and it kind of put together, is just as good, if not better, than that the Cubs lineup. You look at the bullpens, and as it's had their struggles, but, you know, really the Cubs bullpen, really with Wade Davis at the end, is strong, but they've got some issues as well, kind of with the bridge. The Nats have those three guys at the back end of their pen, and Doolittle and Kinsler and Mattson, that have been pretty lights out, so they've got them. So, I mean, the Nats really have an advantage in every kind of aspect of this series. Now, we know in October that usually doesn't really mean a whole lot, especially when you get into a short series. But as far as on paper, this is a series the Nationals should win and they should feel good about, especially if they can get Max healthy and pitch him in one of those games, one or two, so you can potentially use him twice in a series.
How about the expectations out there in D.C.? You know, I think this is probably the best Nationals team that's been put together, and there's been some good. I think it's a fun team to watch. You know, as a Cubs fan, I'm very nervous for this series. I think as a baseball fan, it should be a very good series and fun to watch. But what are the expectations out there in D.C.? I don't know, really know how the D.C. crowd gets into their sports teams compared to a lot of other markets, because it's such a transient community.
Yeah, you know, the Nationals obviously are a new team, you know, still only 12 years old, just kind of debuted in 05 here. They're nervous here. I think, you know, when you look at a team who's obviously had the success they've had, they've been here before and, you know, had the regular season success, won a lot of games and then get to a first round where they probably should win, and then it's kind of gone the other way on them. And it's kind of unfair to the Nationals, but you also look at some of the things the Capitals have done in the NHL. You know, they've also had a lot of one seeds and good regular seasons that have kind of not been with a whole lot of haven't made a whole lot of difference in the playoffs. I think that that collective kind of disappointment has got everybody kind of cautiously optimistic going into this series. You know, that combined with the injuries to Bryce and Max, and you're kind of just uncertain exactly what you're getting out of those guys. That being said, I'm really looking forward to this series. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see just the talent levels that you'll see on the Cubs side, the Nats side. There's so many little just matchups, like you said, between Dusty coming back, the stars like Bryce Harper and Chris Bryant and Max Scherzer and Arrieta and Lester. And you know, you're talking about Cy Young Award winners, talking about guys who won Manager of the Year. It's going to be a lot of fun. Young players who obviously are really talented in Trey Turner and Contreras. And you know, I mean, there's going to be so much talent and so many kind of fun storylines all over the field that I'm really looking forward to. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Because I think both teams are really good and have a chance to, if they can get past this first round, they get all the way to the World Series.
Hey, real quick before I let you go, who do you think makes it into the World Series? And I know predictions are pretty useless, especially in baseball, but it's fun to do it anyway.
And I'm pretty terrible at them, so this is really not going to help anybody. I like the Indians. It's kind of – everybody keeps picking the Indians now, but, I mean, that team looked good, and they really don't have any holes in the American League. I picked the Dodgers early in the year. So it sounds like I'm patting myself on the back. Like, yeah, I saw the Dodgers before anybody else, but I was on the Dodgers early on. I still think they're a good team despite kind of the midsummer, late summer, you know, collapse they kind of had. But, if I had to pick somebody right now, I would just stick to what I had, which is the Dodgers. But I really think the National League can really come, if any of the top four teams here, obviously, whoever wins the wild card game, but Arizona looked pretty good too. If any of those teams really gets on a run and makes the World Series, that wouldn't be that surprise. I know it's not really an answer here, but I'll go ahead with Dodgers and Indians.
Cool. Hey, enjoy the ride, Jamal, and we always appreciate your time. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Anytime.
All right, thanks much. Jamal Collier writes for MLB.com. Follow him at Jamal Collier. At Jamal Collier on Twitter. Evan Connor, producer, reminding us the Washington baseball team has not won a playoff series since 1924. So it's something that they're a little starved for out there in the nation's capital. One thing that's interesting about this season is kind of here towards the end, the teams that made the playoffs are all really good, especially in the National League, and there's not a whole lot else. You know, I think the best teams in baseball made the playoffs this year. And I think it'll be fun to see, but there was not as much parity.
Yeah, that's right, and I keep forgetting about the Dodgers. They had the great historic start, and they had a little bit of collapse there, but they still have had a fantastic season, and they're certainly a team to watch out for. The Nationals and Cubs are as good as they get, and whoever comes out of this wild card is going to be fun to watch. So I'm excited about the National League playoffs, maybe not so much on the American League side. I think the Indians look like the clear favorite on that side right now, but you know, for baseball to try to get back and get exciting again, I think they've got a good set of games here coming up here in this opening series.
Yeah, I think Boston Houston will be fun to watch too. I think Verlander going in game one, and
Verlander's like 5-0 with like an ERA just over one since he's gotten to Houston.
Phenomenal, like him. It's just total new life for him. Best move he's made in his recent memory for his career. Also, one more thing is interesting about, you know, we're talking about Dusty Baker and how he's remembered for mismanaging Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood and all that. Well, Joe Maddon won a World Series in spite of mismanaging pitchers late in the World Series, particularly in Game 6 and Game 7. All these storylines, like Jamal said, pretty fun.
Winning cures all.
There you go, and don't we know that around here. All right, Anthony Zillis from News Gazette Preps is joining us when we come back. We've got some other odds and ends to get to. You've got sports talk here on Wednesday. .544 on Sports Talk. Scott and Marcus with you till 6 o'clock. Anthony Zillis is the man about town covering the Preps beat for the News Gazette. Checking in with us. How you doing, Anthony?
I'm doing pretty well. Have been a couple fun games the last week. I was at Unity Monticello. Good time of the year for prep sports.
Is that because those were two undefeated teams? Is this the best Unity team Scott Hamilton has had?
Well, that's saying a lot because he's made the playoffs in all 23 of his seasons and made the state championship multiple
I think it's
five times. Yeah,
I never won it.
Right. Yeah, hasn't won it, but. This has got to be up there. I mean, you'd have to say it's all matter now of kind of where they get placed in the playoff bracket. I think will have a lot to do with how far they go. But just seeing them beat Monticello, who's been frankly just a dominant team this season, and Monticello had a not the toughest schedule early on, but beat Bloomington Central Catholic by. Quite a bit the week before Unity beat them. So, but a lot of times these teams will play during the regular season, and then they'll play during the playoffs, and the result will be reversed, which was the case 2 years ago. So it'll be interesting to see as we go along.
Tuscola undefeated. They're on this massive winning streak that's stretched over, I think, two seasons plus. Mm-hmm. Their maybe best chance to lose is this Friday against St. Teresa.
Right, yeah. It's just a crazy conference schedule. For Tuscola and the Central Illinois Conference, it's been kind of the one they've marked all year. But you had Shelbyville, who was I believe a state quarterfinalist last year, who they just beat, knocked off Central A&M, Warrensburg. Latham last week, who's another good team, and then this week St. Teresa, who is could be who was a state semifinalist last year and could be in line for a state run this year in Class 3A.
Looked at the standings and the matchups. These two teams are common opponents. I think very similar in the results there. So this could come down to maybe the last possession, who has the ball last, who makes a big play late.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's how it was against Shelbyville a couple weeks ago. Tuscola. And hey, it might not be a terrible thing if they lose a game. Andy Romine talking their coach before the season was talking about how. Maybe that hasn't been the best thing for them when it came down to the postseason that they haven't lost in the regular season because they haven't been to practice the day after a loss, so they haven't been able to kind of assess and be critical of themselves. So maybe if they do lose, it's not the worst thing, and maybe they make a deeper run in the playoffs after being knocked out early the last 2 years.
A couple other storylines I was catching this week: boys golf, Champaign Central. They win their regional. How deep can they go?
Yeah, Champaign Central, a team that finished high last year, I believe sixth in the state last year in Class 2A, brought back a sophomore, Justin McCoy, who was actually he was leading the Twin City championship over the summer. That's the first kind of time I saw him this year. After the first day, he led as high school sophomore leads the Twin City championship, which was pretty impressive. And he leads them along with Connor Butts. Kind of a team that can maybe finish top five in the state this year.
And then the high school of St. Thomas More, for all the struggles they're having with football this year, some of their other programs are just having outstanding years. Oh, you're talking about a record-setting year for St. Thomas More, soccer, and then their volleyball program as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are two teams that could make a run to the. Make a state run this year. Kind of two different teams, a little bit kind of interesting. St. Thomas More volleyball has a couple of Division I recruits with Micah Allison, who is a national team, youth national team player, and she's committed to Auburn, and actually her teammate Allie Tram committed to Alabama, so they'll be rivals in college. Whereas St. Thomas More is they have a couple, they have really talented players. They have Joe Hoffman, who's a talented guy, but a lot of they have a big a really good senior class, but a lot of them didn't even play soccer before they got into high school. I was talking to their goalkeeper Jake Sillette yesterday, and he's up there in the state's rankings for shutouts, and he was telling me about how he had never played soccer. He'd always played football growing up, and kind of thought soccer was dumb growing up, and then he was turned on to the game in high school because the culture that's kind of built there. It's a really, really good culture with that team, and they've built a winner out of these different pieces.
I want to go back to football real mm-hmm. quick, and there's another game. Danville and Peoria High
right.
play this week. Does Peoria play defense?
Oh, okay. No, absolutely not. No,
it's not necessary when you score
like,
seven.
Do they even field guys on the defensive side?
You know,
of the ball?
They just their strategy is just let the other team score and then you get the ball
back.
Quicker. Yeah, no. Their games are rarely under 100 points.
I've seen they've given up over 70 a few times. They've scored 90 at least once.
Right.
And, I mean, just it's ridiculous numbers.
Right.
I would like to know the scoring average of their basketball teams
and see if it's probably it's definitely low.
Well, it's pretty neat. I saw Danville is having a fantastic. They have the one loss. They gave up 76 points and a loss to Normal West. But
right.
in the other games, they've only given up 7 or 6 points.
Right.
In all those games, so they've got a pretty stout defense unless they're playing Normal West.
Oh yeah. I mean, hey, you look at this Big 12, and it's just ridiculous with some of these offenses. You know, Peoria, the defending state champion, Caron Taylor, their quarterback, they lost their first two games of the season. So just goes to show you how strong this conference is. But that'll be
except in Champaign-Urbana.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a rough year for Champaign-Urbana teams, but you can't just squeak by when you're in the Big 12.
No, you absolutely can't. All right, Preps podcast this week. Where are you guys headed? If you got one going,
we will have a big a Preps podcast, but I think we're staying home this week.
Oh.
We'll still be podcasting tomorrow.
Okay, and where are you going to be Friday night?
Friday night. Well, this week I have a week off this week, but I'm leaving in the capable hands of Matt Daniels, Scott Ritchie, and the rest of our staff.
All right. See, I didn't know that. I wouldn't have probably asked that if I knew that. But
that's okay.
You deserve a week off.
I'll be in Atlanta. That's where I'll be for a wedding.
Okay, but you're already married, so it's not your own wedding.
No, right? Not my. No, not this time.
All right. Well, cool. Hey, Anthony. Always good to see you. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Scott.
Anthony Zillis covers the Preps beat. You can follow him at ADZillis on Twitter. You can follow the News Gazette Preps at NG Preps. We got a little bit more here on Sports Talk right after this. Scott and Marcus on Sports Talk. And, Marcus, Cam Newton is... Cam Newton, this afternoon, apparently made, well, there's no other way to say it, he made a sexist comment to a female reporter. He was asked by Jordan Rodriguez. Cam, this is her question. Cam, I know you take a lot of pride in seeing your receivers play well. Devin Funchess has seemed to really embrace the physicality of his routes and getting those extra yards. Does that give you a little bit of enjoyment to see him kind of truck sticking people out there? Newton was smirking while Rodriguez asked the question. He made this comment. He said, quote, "It's funny to hear a female talk about routes. It's funny," before giving his thoughts on the receiver in question. Rodriguez later tweeted, "I don't think it's funny to be a female and talk about routes. It's my job." And she said, "I spoke with him after and it was worse. I chose not to share," referring to whatever he said afterward, "because I have an actual job to do today and one he will not keep me from."
Foot firmly planted in his mouth. And the thing about that, the second comment from her, and when I saw this and heard about it, I figured that he probably didn't realize that he had done something wrong. And then she confirmed that she went to talk to him about it, and I don't think he sees anything wrong with what he did. And that just goes to show you how, I don't know if immature is the word or unaware Cam Newton is about some of these things, but I mean, he's just wrong.
And, you know, do you think between the moment where he said that and when he goes to talk to the reporter, maybe a PR person would have run interference and said, "Cam, let's talk about this," or "Here's what you meant to say," or...
He probably still wouldn't understand it. I really don't think he would.
But if you're an NFL quarterback, you're supposed to be very intelligent. I mean, isn't that like one of the things, like they take these IQ tests and all this stuff to understand an NFL playbook? I mean, this guy can't be a box of rocks in there.
Maybe his intelligence is just strictly all in the playbook.
That's it. He's used up the memory, the hard drive
right
there.
I go back to the movie The Program. Remember that from the 90s? the linebacker, Alvin Mack, right? He was kind of – he was portrayed as this dumb as rocks guy, couldn't pass his classes, but put him in the film room, and the coach started asking him all these things that you see, and he was brilliant. He knew everything that was going on. So I don't know. Maybe Cam's – I don't know if Cam's like that or not, but he just seems to be unaware of some things socially, and he's got to get that fixed.
Yeah, and you know what? It hurts that a lot of people are going to rally to her side, and, you know, we've talked about it on this program. We know we've had female reporters on who know that there's biases still out there, and it's just sad. But I think at the same time, maybe this will do a positive thing, too, for women in sports journalism, because I think he's the one that entirely has egg on his face with this whole thing.
They've got it pretty rough, women do. In journalism, they really do.
Yeah, there's a lot of obstacles, particularly in sports journalism.
Also, yeah.
You know, but all right, today coming out the annual GM survey for the NBA. It's now in its 16th year, and all the GMs of the NBA get all kinds of questions, that predictions that they have. Who do they think will win the 2018 NBA Finals?
Golden State.
Not a hard one. 93%. Of GMs say that. They believe the top two teams in the NBA are going to again be Golden State and Cleveland. They believe LeBron James. 50% of the GMs say LeBron James will be the MVP.
It's always the MVP.
Yeah.
It should be.
Followed by Kevin Durant. Third, Kawhi Leonard. If you were starting a franchise today and could sign any NBA player, who would it be? Who would you pick?
Today?
Yeah.
Or are we talking about, like, based on age and everything?
Well, I think so, because it's not LeBron's, not the first choice, although he's in their top five choices.
Anthony Davis.
He received votes. Carl Anthony Towns of Minnesota.
Yeah, he's a good one. Yeah.
Who is the GM's top player. Let's see, which player most likely, he's also voted most likely to have a breakout season. All right, some of the questions that came up today in that GM. Oklahoma City made the best offseason moves. According to the GMs.
That's always a good read, and those guys are really well connected. They know what the heck's going on in the NBA, so a lot of that stuff is pretty good source there.
Tomorrow on the program, Gary Dolphin, play-by-play voice for the Iowa Hawkeyes, as Illinois gets ready for their Saturday matchup at 11 a.m. against the Hawkeyes Big Ten road game. Nancy Faye from Illinois Women's Basketball, we will have a conversation with her. There's some comments as well from Illinois Volleyball, and Marcus will hand out MJ's.
Oh, yeah, we'll do that.
Thanks, Jamal Collier, for being our guest, along with Anthony Zillis. If you miss anything, it'll soon be a podcast at WDWS.com. You can also find us on iTunes. Thank you, Evan Kahn, producer-engineer. Ed Bonner, chief engineer. It's Newstalk 1400, WDWS Champaign-Urbana News Gazette Media Station. It is 6 o'clock. Good night.